Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Aaron Quinones. Aaron is with Q Missions, which is an organization that exists to create a platform for veterans to live out the calling that God has put on their lives. And they help create infrastructure so that they can focus on the mission at hand by providing support and funding and other mentoring programs for veterans. So Aaron, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about maybe your time in the service and what your organization, Q Missions, is all about. I'm sure you could do a much better job explaining it than I could.
Yeah, well, hey, I just want to say thank you for having me on your podcast. It's a real blessing to be able to come on and share with people what we do to help veterans out here in the community. So thanks for allowing me this time. And I hope that I can inspire some of your listeners here to get out there and start serving other people. So I grew up in the mountains of Northern California in this small little hippie commune, redneck town called Mad River. It's right on the Humboldt-Trinity County line. So if you guys know Humboldt County, tons of pot farming that goes on there. I grew up, my parents were pot farmers, and I grew up in a really strange lifestyle. So I've seen that whole industry go from the Wild West to Main Street. So I have a very unique perspective on that whole industry. But I knew that wasn't the kind of lifestyle I wanted to live. So when I grew up, just watching, you know, that society and how they interacted with everyone else, I knew I wanted something different for my life. And I started reading a lot of books in the library, because we didn't have TV or anything like that. We were pretty poor. And so I'd read a lot of books in the library, and I loved National Geographic magazines. And I loved reading about all these places, the Mayan ruins and the Aztec temples, the pyramids over in Egypt and Angkor Wat in Cambodia, all these great places. Like, I want to go see these places. So when I got into high school, I thought my best opportunity, coming from, you know, a society and an environment like that, would be to join the military, because then I could travel the world and see the world and experience all these places. But anybody who's been in the military realizes that that's what they show you on the poster, but that's not reality, man. You're usually sitting in some, hot desert under a small canopy with a radio, looking at the desert. So I didn't get to see any of those places when I was in the Marines. But I did really enjoy my time in the military. I was a Marine. I was part of First Anglico. And so if you guys don't know what that is, it's okay. It's the Air Naval Gunfire Liaison Company. And so what we do, we're a small group of us, forward observers, and we're all master parachutists. So we'll parachute in and we'll call for fire. So we call in air, artillery, mortars. We do, CASAVACs, all that stuff. So we control all the air on station. We can also do combined arms with artillery or naval gunfire, which they've really phased out now. But that was my specialty. So it was a really great job. I got to do a lot of good stuff. I think they took the jump billet away currently for the Anglico Marines, but I know they're trying to get it back. When I was there, I had a jump billet and became a master parachutist, but it was great. I got to do a lot of cool stuff. Became a close combat instructor, naval weapons security manager. Got to do a lot of high speed stuff. So I liked my time in the military. In 2003, I did a deployment to Iraq when the war first kicked off. And when I came back, I was struggling with mental health, and I just really didn't understand it. I didn't know what was going on, and I thought, I had a really limited combat experience. So why am I having these issues? Like, what's going on with this? Tried going to the VA and getting help, and just it wasn't working out for me. So I just started reading again, reading a lot about mental health, how the brain operates and what's going on, and kind of how to fix myself. And so through that, I ended up in a church, and So before that, I was really struggling, like I said, with mental health, and I ended up being homeless for a little bit and living on the street. And when I came out of homelessness, I couldn't find a job anywhere. So I started my own janitorial company. And so it was just me and one other guy, and we're just scrubbing floors because I knew how to do that, right? I mean, everybody in the military knows how to clean some stuff.
Right. So
I figured that's a transferable skill, right? I could do that. And I did it really well because in the military, I teach you how to do it by the numbers. So me and my buddy, we got a really good reputation of doing good work. And we picked up more work and more work and more work. I've been in business 11 years now, and I employ over 100 people here in the Puget Sound. So in 10 years, I went from homeless to a business owner employing over 100 people here in the Seattle area. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. So one of the topics that your organization, Q Missions, deals with, that I haven't really brought up on the show yet, is the topic of religion. Is that correct? Yeah. So, and it's not that I was avoiding this topic on the show at all. It's, you know, I'm a proud Christian. I wouldn't mind having other guests on the show to talk about it because I think it can be really important, especially for those who are going through difficult times, you know, trauma or, you know, PTSD, that type of thing. When we first started chatting online about having you on the show, you said that the spiritual side of PTSD is rarely addressed. Maybe it's because religion is one of those taboo topics mixed in with money and politics that no one really wants to touch. But that doesn't appear to be the case with you in your organization. So how is your organization different? How do you address religion and spirituality? And what is it that you do with that?
Well, that's a really great question. So I'll give you a brief description, and then I'll tell you how I got there. So when I look at all the different treatments that are out there, especially like stuff that's offered from the government or that's government funded or backed or things like that, you know, they treat the mental, the physical, and the emotional side of trauma. And that's great. But that's only three legs of a table. So if you imagine you have a kitchen table, it's got four legs. But if you take one of those legs out, the table looks fine, but it's unstable. As soon as you start putting weight on it, it's going to tip over. And I feel that's the same way with mental health treatment, that if you're only treating the mental side, the physical side, and the emotional side, everything will be okay for a while until that individual gets some extra stress put on them. And then the table folds with extra weight, just like the individual will fold with extra stress in their life, extra weight in their life, because they don't have that fourth leg for stability, the spiritual side. And so I saw this was severely lacking in all the different treatments that I tried, was that they didn't address this spiritual aspect at all. It just wasn't talked about. And if you brought it up, it was kind of like they would just kind of pat you on the head, be like, oh yeah, that's nice, that works for you, but we're not talking about that here. And right. So I think that they do a huge disservice to all the veterans out there because they don't even address it. And so for some people, that's fine. They don't want anything to do with religion. That's great. That's on them. That's their idea. That's great. But there's a lot of people that are in the middle that don't know what they want. And if you never produce that opportunity for them, if you never give them that as a possibility or a resource, they're never going to know about it. And so that's where we fill that gap. For me, I was very anti-religion pretty much my whole life. You know, I had some pretty undesirable experiences with the church when I was a kid. I only went to church like maybe a couple years to some youth group. Didn't really get along there, didn't fit in, had some bad experiences. And so I was really anti-religion my whole military career. And I remember I was really struggling with mental health. It was 2009. Yeah, 2009. I was really struggling with mental health. And I was going to commit suicide. And so I found this, it was a warm July day. And I found this empty parking lot. And so I drove into it and I backed my truck in to this building. And I was going to commit suicide there in that parking lot, in that side parking lot. But I heard some kids playing. And so I was like, all right, there's got to be a playground nearby. So I'm not going to, you know, commit suicide here and have these poor kids by me. So I'm just going to wait until they leave and then I'll do it. I ended up falling asleep. And when I woke up, those suicidal ideations were gone. And I was like, okay. So I just drove off, didn't think much about it. couple weeks later, a friend invited me to church. And I was like, all right, I'll go check it out, because he'd been bugging me for a while. And so I'm driving to, he gives me the address, and I'm driving to church, and I pull into that very same parking lot that I almost committed suicide in just a few days before. Wow. And it was a super eerie feeling to be driving back in to that parking lot thinking, wow, I almost ended my life here. This is crazy. What is going on? And I started attending that church, not really understanding the religion, not really understanding what they were talking about. So I just started reading the Bible, like cover to cover. I'd read it every day. I joined a small group there because I figured if I'm going to do this, I need to learn as much as I can. You know, I gave my life to the Lord and I walked up, did the altar call. And I thought, okay, well, this is it. Like, I'll do the altar call and all these problems are going to go away and I'll be fine. And so I do that. And man, the clouds don't open up. The birds don't start singing. Like, nothing happens. And I thought, well, that was a dud. That didn't work. Like, I'm still having all these problems. Like, right. Okay. But I didn't give up. You know, I just kept reading the Bible. And the guys that were in my Bible study that I joined were great. They were so gracious with me, man. So if you, they were so gracious because I had so many questions all the time. And so we'd be studying something. And then like one time a month, the entire Bible study would just revolve around me and my questions. They called it Aaron's questions. And so, cause I'd be reading the Bible and have all these questions and I wouldn't want to interrupt the group, but I'd still want to know. And so one time a month they would say, all right, well, what questions do you have? And I would just go through all these questions that I had and they would explain it to me and help me understand what was going on. And so that was really great. It really helped me a lot, but I still wasn't really seeing any, benefits of being a Christian as far as my mental health goes. Yeah, I felt better. There's a group of guys who kind of understood me, but they weren't veterans. They couldn't understand exactly what I was going through, but at least they were cool to me. They could empathize and they would, you know, be there for me, but not in the capacity that I needed. And it was just because they didn't have that shared experience. They didn't understand what I was going through. So no fault of their own. These guys were great. I'm still good friends with these guys today. But it just wasn't enough to help me get over that hump. And so I remember I got invited to go to Mexico by one of the pastors to build a home for a homeless family. And it was on Memorial Day. And okay. I was like, I'm not really interested in doing that. Like, I've done all my time overseas. I'm good, man. I'm just going to stay right here in the U.S. There's plenty of stuff I can do here. But he kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing. And so through a series of circumstances, I end up going to this Mexico missions trip, and it was on Memorial Day. And so that was another reason for me to be like, no, sorry, not going to do it. Mm-hmm. I had plans for Memorial Day. I was going to sit at a bar and get drunk and remember the guys that didn't come home with me. You know, that was what I'd been doing. That's my tradition. That's what I was going to do. But I decided to do something different. I felt that calling on my heart. So I went to Mexico and I built that home for a homeless family. And when I was there, I didn't know what was happening to me, but it felt like these layers were just getting stripped off of me. You know, this weight was getting stripped off of me. I was like, what is this feeling? I've never experienced this before. I'm having emotions because at that point I was totally numbed out to everything. Like, I wasn't happy. I wasn't sad. I was just completely neutral, numbed out. Like, if you even look at pictures of me back then, you know, I just have this like blank stare on my face. I'm like not like checked out. And like, what is happening? Like, I'm having emotions for the first time. This is strange to me. And so I didn't know what was happening, but I knew I needed more of that. Whatever that was, I wanted more of it. And so I came back to church and I talked to the pastor. I said, hey, what other trips do you guys do? I said, well, we do several trips a year. He got me connected with the missions director at the church. And he took, he started taking me on all these trips. So I would go 3 or 4 times a year to various different countries, Haiti, Honduras, Swaziland, Malawi, Kenya, Cambodia, the Philippines, Indonesia, Honduras, Mexico. I mean, I go all over the world and I build churches and schools and orphanages. We dig well, we give out food. And that whole time, God was healing me. And I didn't realize it at the time, you know, I was just doing it because I was being obedient to what the Lord called me to do. But I learned that there was healing through serving other people and healing through serving God. And it was really remarkable because the whole time I'm still going through mental health treatment at the VA and these different things. I'm trying all kinds of stuff, hypnotherapy, all this stuff, and none of it is helping. The only thing that was actually helping me, truly helping me, was being able to go on mission and help other people. When I was helping on other people, I was on point, I was on mission, and I was getting 10 times more than I was actually giving to the people I was serving. And it was, so it was really self-serving because I know that if I go and I help these people, I'm going to feel good about it. I'm going to receive healing as well. And so I create, through this process, I created this whole concept of healing through service for myself. So by reading different, mental health magazines and different research studies that were out, there's a really good research study out. It's called the, I'm drawing a blank right now. The Mother Teresa Effect. That's what it's called. It's called the Mother Teresa Effect. And so this college, what they did is they took these group of students and they did saliva swabs because they were looking for a specific protein that made them feel happy. And so they were looking for this protein. And so they did these swabs before, and then they had them watch 90 minutes of Mother Teresa out doing good works in the world, like a little mini documentary of all the different things that she did to help people and what she did and what she was about. And then they took saliva swabs at the end, and guess what? They found that protein in high concentrations. And so it was really remarkable. And it backs up a lot of what the Bible says too, about helping one another. And so I had the Bible and had these research studies, and I just built this program for myself to better understand mental health and how to overcome PTSD and trauma. And it worked out great for me. I was having great results. My business was doing well. My marriage was doing well. You know, I was, when I was on mission, I felt more alive than ever. You know, I'm helping people. And so that's how it all started. It was just me trying to figure out mental health for myself and create that fourth leg of the table, which is the spiritual side, which is what a lot of different organizations are missing. And so I try and bring that to the forefront. Like, hey, we still need the mental health counseling. We still need the physical rehabilitation. And maybe you need some medication that's going to help you get through some of this counseling part. You still need to understand the emotional side of it, but we got to bring in the spiritual aspect as well. Otherwise, you're going to be unstable when you're out there in society.
Yeah, and you know, it's really interesting to hear the story that you had where you go and you're serving other people, and you know, to someone, you know, outside looking in, who maybe doesn't, you know, have any experience with service and things like that, they may think, well, how is that possibly going to help you? You know, that seems like it's adding more stress to you, and like that can't possibly be a benefit, really. But in your case, you know, it works. And I suspect that in a lot of cases, for a lot of people, it will work as well. It'll be a benefit to them to go out and help other people. And I, you know, I'm not a expert on this subject, but I would suspect that, you know, you find a purpose or meaning in that work that you're doing to help those people. And that's something that I think is especially important these days, where a lot of us are, you know, when we're recording this, a lot of people are doing the isolation thing with the coronavirus that's going on. And,
yeah.
And you know, I got to imagine that a lot of people are probably struggling right now with their mental health now that we're, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks into it, whatever it is. You know, that people are who normally are getting out and actively serving other people in the, whether it's in their job as a, you know, maybe law enforcement, that's a way of serving people, you know, military or other things that they're doing. People are probably starting to struggle a little bit in that that service aspect because they're stuck at home, or they're, you know, they're not out volunteering the way they normally would be, perhaps, you know. So what do you think it is about the aspect of that service that Mother Teresa effect, if you will. Like, what is it about that that changes people, that helps people kind of find that sense of meaning and purpose and help them with their own mental health?
Well, you know, I go back to looking at the life of Jesus. He came not as a ruler, right, to command over people, but as a servant. And you see that throughout his ministry. He's serving other people. I mean, he's washing the disciples' feet. He's helping the woman at the well get water. He's serving people by releasing them of demons and healing people. His whole ministry is serving other people. And that's what he came here to teach all of us. You know, and it's funny because the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who were the religious leaders of the time, they would come and they would mock Jesus and they would try and trick him into speaking blasphemy and things like that. And so one of the things, he was at the temple and he was teaching, and the Pharisees came up and they said, "Okay, teacher," and they said that in a mocking way. They said, which is the greatest commandment? And Jesus knows that they're trying to trick him, and that if he says that one is greater than the other, that it would be considered blasphemy. So he says, well, actually, there are two. The first is to love your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul. And the other is like it, to love others as you love yourself. If you've done this, then you fulfill the laws of God. And so it just totally turned them on their head. So we're to love God and mm-hmm. to love other people. And if we're going to love other people, we have to serve them. We have to help them. We have to invest in them. And so serving other people, it doesn't have to be some grand thing of going to Africa and digging a well for a village. Like, that's great, and that's what I do. But service really starts at home. And so people see me out there and they think, oh, must be nice. He gets to go all over these places and do all these things. Well, it costs me a lot of money, okay, because I spend a lot of my own money. And for the first 7 years, it was just me going on my own with my family and spending, you know, about $2,500 to $3,000 per person per trip. And I got a family of four. So you figure that out, Matt, real quick. I do three or four of those a trip. All my money is going to do these trips. So I've definitely invested in myself and in the kingdom by doing that. But to get back to what I was saying, when we serve other people, it doesn't have to be overseas or some big grand thing. It could be something small. Service starts at home. So I wasn't, during my time, those first 7 years, I wasn't just going overseas. I was also serving in my church. Every Sunday, I was there from the time the doors opened till the time the doors closed, because I helped arrange the different chairs for the different services. I would clean up the bathrooms in between services. I would cook. Me and two of my buddies would cook a meal for the youth, because they would have their service at night. So I was constantly serving. There were different service projects that we would go and do. Anytime there was a big event, I was there to help serve. I helped the church that I was with, New Life Church. They grew really fast. They're over 3,000 people right now. And so they needed a security team. So I helped write the SOPs for the security team, do all of the training, because they wanted people to actually have some combative training, and they have a couple guys that are actually armed there, just because the threats of the church get crazy, as we've seen, right? And so we were way ahead of that curve years ago. I was training these guys, and I still train members of their team that come to me who are new, and I put them through the paces. So I'm serving the church. I'm serving my family. I'm serving my friends. And so service doesn't have to be this great big thing where you fly overseas and do this, you know, build a house or something like that. It can be at home. It can be checking on your neighbor. It can be the elderly couple that's next door going and cutting their lawn. You're serving others, and there's healing through that. And if you don't believe me, just go try it. Do it for 30 days and then come back and tell me it didn't work.
The worst thing that could happen is you made someone's day and you find out that it didn't work. That's the absolute worst thing that could happen out of that whole scenario there. So yeah, absolutely.
That's right. And a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't know what God wants me to do. Like, what should I be doing? And I say, just serve in your church. It doesn't matter. Just be working. And then when God calls you, you'll be ready.
Yeah.
And so I tell people a lot, like, I don't know what ministry God wants me to serve in. Serve in children's ministry. They need plenty of people out there. But I tell people that look where your pain is, and usually your ministry will be there also. So for me, my pain was dealing with mental health and PTSD and trauma. That's where my pain was. And so helping other people go through that process has become my ministry. And to get a little bit deeper, I've been homeless twice in my life. I was homeless as a kid when I was 12. And then again, coming out of the military, I was homeless. So I've been homeless twice. So that first mission trip to go and build homes for a homeless family, like, I did not want to do that because it touched on too many sore spots for me personally.
Sure.
But since I've been doing that, I've been able to overcome that. And now I find joy in that work. I find joy in building homes for the homeless. And so I love James, the book of James, chapter 1, verse 2. It says, count it all joy. And what he's talking about, the next verse is, count it all joy, brothers, when you fall into various trials, because the trials produce persistence of your faith. And so that's me to a T. You know, I have to find joy in the trials that I've been through, because now I can lead other people through that healing as well. But if I just shy away from it, if I just turn away and not work on those things, then I'm missing an opportunity to lead others out of that darkness as well.
That's a great explanation. I think that can help clear things up too, for people who are struggling with how is helping somebody else going to help me? How does that even, you know, how do I justify that? How do I rationalize it? Make sense of all of that stuff, you know? So that was I think a really good explanation there of how that service can help. You know, one other thing, kind of switching gears a little bit here. So my brother was killed in Afghanistan in 2010, and I was in country at the same time, too. We're just in different locations. But that night, after I found out he was killed, I was in the shower by myself. And I remember just saying out loud, you know, his name. I was like, why? You know, why, Steve? Why? And I obviously wasn't talking to him because, you know, he was dead. I was talking to God. You know, I know that after my tour in Afghanistan, I had a lot of questions for God. He and I had a few good long talks about some of the stuff that had happened. You know, things like, you know, why did good people like my brother, why did good people have to die? Or, you know, why were we forced into situations where we had to make these morally difficult decisions? You know, things like that. And I discovered that, what I discovered is that God doesn't promise us a perfect life that's free from hardships. You know, there's going to be heartbreak. There's going to be grief. There's going to be pain. God doesn't shield us from all of that stuff. But if you believe in his plan and what he has, you know, planned out for us, through that faith, you'll see that he uses those things to steer the ship in a way, if you want to use that kind of analogy, to get you to move in the direction that he wants to go. And to me, it was an extremely powerful thing to realize. Now, that was kind of my own, like, revelation moment where I kind of, you know, realized that, you know, God isn't going to make life all rainbows and unicorns and make everything perfect in the way we see perfect. You know, I think that's an important distinction too, you know, where we have our view of a perfect life where everyone is healthy and happy and things just run like a well-oiled machine, but that's not necessarily God's view of perfection, and sometimes that well-oiled machine is heading in the wrong direction, and so sometimes that machine needs to be course corrected, and sometimes that requires a traumatic event or some thing to happen to kind of move you in the right direction. Now I say all that kind of leading up to the next question that I had for you. What are some of the maybe quote unquote, like, success stories that you can share with us of people who maybe have had their own, you know, light bulb moments where they realize, like, wow, this is something that I needed, that I was missing in my life. You know, maybe it was a vet in a bad place who came to your organization and came out the other side, a stronger person, or, you know, maybe a better version of themselves, something like that. Like, what are some of those kind of success stories? If you could share any of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of those stories that have come out of Q Missions and the work that we've been doing. We've been doing this now. This is going into our fifth year of serving veterans. But I just want to take a moment and say thank you for sharing that with us and with the audience. I don't know if you'd shared it with them before, but thank you for sharing it with me. It's tough to do that. So I appreciate your vulnerability there to share absolutely. That with all of us. So,
yeah, one of the things I like to do is to stay vulnerable in that sense and like share some of the deeper, darker kind of things that have kind of gone on and let people know that it's okay to talk about these things. And, you know,
it's
not necessarily publicly on a podcast. I'm not saying everyone needs to go out and buy a microphone and you know, put it out there for the world to hear, but, you know, it's okay to share these things in confidence in a place where you can talk to a counselor maybe or to somebody who can listen, you know, so that's one of the reasons why I feel like I need to share some of these things is so that other people know that it's okay to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And that was, I was held back for many years because I was choosing not to do that. I wanted to keep my testimony private and right. not be the guy out front in the organization. You know, I wanted to be the guy in the back kind of, you know, lifting other people up. But what God showed me is that I have to lead from the front. I've got to be out front and tell people about these things and my struggles. And my testimony will be the roadmap that will help other people, you know, find their way out of darkness. And mm-hmm. so what I tell people is that whatever's in the darkness that you're trying to hide or keep hidden, if you bring it to the light, the darkness has to flee, because dark and light, they literally cannot occupy the same space. I mean, you turn on the light switch and the darkness is gone instantly.
Gone. Yeah.
But when you bring out those things that are painful and hurtful, you bring them to the light, the darkness has to flee. Like, it's gone. Right. You know, and it relieves that burden. So you have to do it in a safe way with people who you know are going to support you. But mm-hmm. bringing those things out is so, so important. So before I get into the success stories, and I have one for you that I'll tell you. Sure. I wanted to go back to James. And so I wrote about this. I wrote a book. And so I wrote about this. It says, count it all joy, James 1:2, count, to check over one by one to determine, it, the direct representation of the trial, all, the whole collective of every experience and joy and emotion of great delight and happiness. Why does James tell us to count it all joy when we fall into various trials? He explains it in the next two verses. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. James 3:1-4. James is telling us that when we change our mindset to find joy in the midst of our trials, we are purifying our faith to perfection. In verse 12, he continues this when he says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For he has stood the test and will receive the crown of life, which God promises to those who love them. And so when we go through those trials and when we go through those painful moments in our life, that's the testing of our faith. And if we remain steadfast in our faith, then we receive the crown of life, right? We can use that as a tool to help other people struggling with similar things. And I wrote a whole chapter on that in my book, which people can read, but that's just a short little synopsis of what happens when we find joy in the trial that we're experiencing. So right. I just want to touch base on that really quick before we moved on. So success stories. Yes, I have lots of success stories. One of my favorite ones to talk about is Patrick Wright. And so Patrick Wright is my best friend. And we joined the Marine Corps together through the buddy system. So we graduated in 1997. And we had another buddy graduate with us at the same time, Brian Bertrand. But he didn't go to boot camp with us. He went to college. And it was a year later, I think I was home. I was home on leave or something like that. He was really struggling in college. And he was asking me, like, what are you doing? You know, how are things going for you? I said, I'm doing great, man. The Marine Corps is fantastic. And so I talked to him and recruited him into the Marine Corps. And then he became a Marine. He became a navigator on a C-130. And then I asked him, he ended up serving under me for about 4 months. We worked together. And then he went off and did his other duty station. And in 2002, he was killed when his aircraft went down on the border of Afghanistan. And man, I had some serious guilt over that because I'm the guy who talked him into going in the Marine Corps, you know? And so it really just broke me up for a long time. So on Memorial Day, I would sit at a bar and drink beer and think about Brian. You know, I mean, that's what I would do. And when I built that first house in Mexico, God showed me that there's a better way to honor the men and women who didn't come back. And that's to serve others in life as they served us in death. And so it totally changed my concept of Memorial Day, is that I know that the guys that I have served with and that didn't come back, they wouldn't want me bellied up to a bar sitting there crying in a beer. They'd want me out there helping people, because that's what they were doing when they died. Mm-hmm. They weren't sitting there bellied up to a bar. They were out there working, helping people, making the world a better place. And so that's what, if I want to truly honor their memory, that's what I need to do. And so that was the catalyst that started me on that, on my missions work. And so every year I would go back and I would build with my church a home for a homeless family. And it was my quiet way of honoring Brian. And so when God called me to start Q Missions and start leading other veterans on the mission field to find the same healing I did, at first I was like, no way, I'm not interested in that. That's a lot of work. I've already done a startup company, and so I'm not interested. But again, through a series of events, I ended up leading my first trip down to Mexico and built. I start the guys exactly where I started, which is in Mexico, building a home for a homeless family. And after that first trip, I was like, wow, this actually worked. I'm seeing these guys come alive. I was like, all right. So I started to formalize the program. So, okay, I can't just take these guys. I actually got to start teaching them something. So 6 months later, I took my next trip, but I had written a little field manual for them, and I started training them, and I grabbed Pat, you know, because he's one of my buddies. I'm like, hey, you got to come with me, man. He's like, I'm not into that. I'm like, I don't care. We're buddies. Like, you're coming just because we're friends. And so and this is something that we do that I don't promote it online or anything like that. But I'll tell you guys here, for everybody who's listening, is that every home that we build in Mexico, we build in honor of one of our fallen brothers.
Okay, awesome.
And so every home is built in honor of a fallen hero. And we bring members of the family with us to be part of the build. And so with it being, I mean, I did that first trip, but the first real trip where I was like teaching PTSD, had a formalized program going. I thought, I got to build this house for Brian, like officially. Mm-hmm. And so the hardest thing I did was to go to his family and ask them to come with me.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was hard, man. Oh, jeez. I remember I was so nervous. So I wrote his parents a letter, Patty and Bruce. I wrote him a letter just saying, hey, I don't know if you guys remember me, but could I talk to you guys? And they called me, because I left my phone number. They called me. And so I talked to him for a little bit, and then I drove down to Coos Bay, Oregon. And I was shaking like a leaf going, I hadn't seen them since the funeral, you know? And so I walk in, and they were so gracious and so happy to see me. And I told them what I wanted to do, and I wanted to build in honor of Brian, and can you guys come with me? You know, and they said, well, we'll think about it. We're pretty old, you know, we'll think about it. And they prayed on it. And not only did they come, but I want to say it was like six members of their family came with us as well.
Oh, awesome.
And they got to work side by side with all these veterans. And so the only people who knew Brian were me and Pat. The rest of these guys were just veterans from all over the country, but they came to go through that program and build in honor of Brian. And so when I run the trip, I run it just like a military operation. So I have squad leaders that are in charge of a group of guys. And, you know, we break everybody into squads. There's a painting squad, framing squad, roofing squad. And so squad leaders know what they need to do. And so they just command their squads, and it just runs like that. We have formations in the morning to do a head count, check on everybody. We do debrief at the end. So it's like a quasi-military operation, the way that I run it, because I'm showing guys that the stuff they learn in the military, those battle tactics, we can use that to overcome PTSD. It's part of the program. And so Pat went through that first mission with me, and he was hooked, man. Like, he was like, this is amazing. I had no idea how this would work. And so he went back home, and he started just helping other people do repairs on their house, like roofing repairs, older veterans. And so we helped him. He worked under my organization for a while until we could get him to the point where he could start his own 501c3. And now he's a registered 501c3, called Operation Rebuild Hope out of Coos Bay, Oregon. And he started out just helping people do repairs on their house, doing repairs in their bathrooms, fixing heat, electrical, building ramps, doing roofing. And so he didn't have all those expertise, but we showed him how to go find those expertise out in the community who were veterans. So there's a veteran electric company called Reese Electric. And, you know, they partner with Pat and they go help him do stuff to help veterans. And so other construction guys that were in the military that now, you know, have a skill set that can help Pat do things. And so he started doing all of that stuff. And then he started getting into not just doing repairs on people's houses, but actually housing homeless veterans. And so that's what he's been doing for the last 2 years, is housing homeless veterans. And he is doing such an amazing job at it. It's awesome to watch him. He's doing such a good job that ORCA, which is Oregon's like Department of Human Services, they've partnered with him, and they helped him with a couple of apartment complexes that they own, but they asked him to run because now he's doing a better job at housing homeless veterans than they are. So they just empowered him to go into the community and do what he does best. And the guy is killing it. And he comes every single year with me to Mexico, and he's also been to Cambodia with me, working on projects there. He's been there a couple times. And so, but man, that guy is doing an amazing job helping other veterans get out of homelessness. And it's really cool because I have a buddy that I was friends with in Anglico who was homeless, and I don't work in that space, right? Like I help heal with mental health, but I don't really do much with homeless veterans, but Pat does. So I got those two connected, and Pat was able to help him get into transitional housing, get his VA benefits, and now helping him find work. So right. It's really cool to watch Pat take that healing through service model and go and live it out in his community. And so we help with it all the time. Like if he has an event, I'll come down and I'll speak for him, or, you know, we'll write letters of support, or, you know, we let him use us as like validation for the program that he's running. Like, hey, we're partnered with Q Missions up in Seattle. And so people recognize that. And so it just adds credibility to what he's doing. But man, it's veterans are so amazing. They're so ingenuitive. Just gotta light them on fire and set them loose, and they will burn down. The whole world.
You give them a mission, and they'll figure out a way to get it done. You know, it's really amazing to see once when it's in action. But that's a great story of someone who, you know, was a little bit hesitant maybe of, you know, going and trying out the service thing and seeing what came out of it, you know, on the other end. And like I said, the worst possible outcome is you try it and it doesn't really work for you and it doesn't move the needle or anything like that. But in this case, that's right. Totally not what happened at all. So that's really awesome to hear that side of the story and see how that's worked for somebody, you know, who is maybe a little hesitant and not, you know, totally bought into the whole concept of it right off the bat, but then, you know, turned around, throughout the whole process. So that's awesome.
Oh yeah. It's been pretty amazing. And there's a lot of other stories, you know, like that. I have a female veteran, Jessica Bergens, who she was helping, people with mobility issues be able to raise funds to get the prosthetics or the mobility equipment that they needed. And so she had this one guy who was a quadriplegic and from birth, and so he had a wheelchair, but he needed a better motorized one that could do off-road. I mean, we're in the Northwest, right? Like, you need an off-road style wheelchair here to just be able to get around and do normal stuff. And so it was like $50,000, I think, for this machine. And so she helped raise money, and her idea was, hey, Aaron, you're airborne, right? I was like, yeah. She's like, so what do you think about this? What do you think if we do a fundraiser where people pay money to watch Kevin jump out of an airplane and parachute? And I was like, that sounds amazing. Let's do that. That sounds awesome. So she got a bunch of other Cuban guys together who were like, yeah, let's do it. Dude, they were on King 5 doing a fundraiser for a guy in a wheelchair, and their fundraising idea was to push him out of an airplane. It was amazing. needless to say, they raised the money they needed because people were like, what? This dude's in a wheelchair and your idea to raise money is we're going to pay money to watch you push him out of an airplane? Like, yeah, I'll pay to see that. Yeah. Let's do it. So, I mean, stuff like that, you know, that's just, it doesn't have to be some grand thing. Just small things like that should make such an impact in that guy's quality of life and his family's quality of life. Cause now they can go to the beach, they can go hiking, they can do these things, go to the lake, and the whole family is impacted by what he did, not just the individual. So there's tons of stories. I could spend 2 hours telling the stories like that about.
That's veterans. Great. Yeah. And it's good to know that there are those super success stories too. And that people are really impacted by the service and how it helps them, you know, kind of find that purpose and their own special mission in life to help other people. What we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, and you briefly mentioned it earlier in the episode too. But you do have a book coming out in a little bit here called Healing Through Service. So I got to imagine it's probably a little bit about what we, you know, the topic of the book is a little bit about what we talked about already on this episode here, but tell us a little bit about the book, what that's about, and then when and where people can buy it. Cause I know it's not out yet as of today, which is March 25th, but it's coming out in a few weeks, right?
Yeah. So you can pre-order it right now through Redemption Press. And so if you look up healing, if you just Google Healing Through Service, Redemption Press, it'll pop up and you can pre-order it there. I think it's like $14. If you buy it like on Amazon or at retailers, I'm charging $22 for it, but a portion of the proceeds go directly to Q Missions to help other veterans go through the program. So the book, like I said before, I'd written just a self-published, a little manual. It's a really thin little manual. Like maybe 75 pages, something like that, just to help guys understand what we were going through. And then I would teach. So when we go, I teach classes when we're there to give guys some additional skills that they can take home with them. And so it also helps them process through the experience that they're having. So I was self-publishing that book and just giving it out to the guys when they'd come on mission. And last year, I had this crusty old Vietnam veteran walk into my office. So I have an office in downtown Auburn. I have my janitorial company there, but 2/3 of the building I use for Q Missions. But you know, my company pays the rent for the whole thing. But the majority of it gets used for the organization. So he comes walking in and he, you know, read about some of the stuff that we were doing and saw some news articles and stories that had happened. And so he came in wanting to talk to me and said, you know, have you ever thought about writing a book about what you're doing? I said, I kind of already have a book, you know, this little pamphlet. I give it to guys and, you know, help them. He's like, no, like an actual real chapter book. He goes, I'm part of Point Man Ministries. And so Point Man Ministries was a Vietnam veteran who came out and then started helping veterans overcome trauma by using scripture. And so he started a whole organization. He was part of that organization. It's really small now and it's kind of died out. It didn't have the longevity, but it worked a lot for the time it was there. It worked and it helped a lot of guys. And so here's this guy showing up on my doorstep telling me that he knows the publisher who published that first book for Point Man Ministries and that I need to talk to her and write a proper book. And I was like, all right, man, I'll take it under advisement, but I kind of got a lot of stuff going on, you know, so when I get around to it, I'll do that. But this dude would not leave me alone. Like, he kept showing up, bro. Like, he would show up like once a month and be like, hey, have you reached out to Redemption Press, Athena? Have you talked to her? I said, no, man, I'm busy. He's like, all right, you need to do it. Kept coming back. I'm not kidding you. This dude showed up at my church, bro. He showed up at my church. He's like in the lobby. He's like looking for me. And so people are like, hey, there's this old Vietnam vet. He's out there looking for Sergeant Q. I'm like, oh, cool. I'll go meet him because people show up like that, right? And it's this same dude. And I'm like, what is happening right now? I was shocked. You know, I'm like, oh, this dude's stalking. He's like, hey, I just, I talked to Athena, and you still haven't started that book, and it's really important that you get this message out there. You can help a lot more people if you publish this book, and a lot more people will have access to this information and this knowledge, and then they can, you know, from there they learn about your program, and then they can go through the program. And I was like, all right, man, like, this dude is serious. He tracked me down. So I started writing the book. I just took that little book that I had, and I added more stories to it. And a lot of the classes that I was teaching, I just took that information and directly put it into the book. And so I wrote it like a 5-paragraph order. So it's very easy. Every chapter is the same. You have the personal recon, which is like a personal story from my life about the point that I'm making. Then you'll have the field intel, which is what does science say about it? You know, what does research say about the subject? Then I have the scriptural unpack. What does the Bible say about that subject? Then I have a tactical application, how to take what you just learned and apply it right now in your life today. And then the last part is a conclusion, which is usually another story, like a success story of the culmination of that chapter. So every chapter is exactly the same, that same layout. So it's some structure there that, that the military guys are used to. Mm-hmm. And so that's the book. It's called Healing Through Service, The Warrior's Guidebook to Overcoming Trauma. I just got the very first copy of it. So there it is, the very first copy. It came in yesterday. And so I've got to proof it, make sure everything's okay. And it should be out first week of April. But okay. Like I said, people can pre-order it now. It's cheaper. Once it's out online, then it'll be $22. And then a part of the proceeds will go into taking guys on mission. So when you read the book, whether you're a civilian or military, it doesn't matter, because trauma is trauma, right? Everybody experiences trauma differently, but the result is always going to be the same. The hypervigilance, the anxiety, the depression, the suicidal ideations, like it all has the same result, whether it was a civilian trauma or a military trauma. We all experience it differently, but the result is going to be the same. So when I write the book, there's a lot of terminology that's directed toward veterans and active duty, but I do my best to explain it in a way that civilians will be able to understand the concepts and be able to put them in place as well. And I've actually, over the last year, been working with several civilians that are dealing with trauma who've come to me. You know, God has brought them into my life, and they say things like, I know this is not the same kind of, you know, trauma, and I don't think I have PTSD, but I'm dealing with this. And that sounds a lot like how you help veterans. So can this stuff help? So I just been teaching them out of the book as well, and they've had great results too. So in the book, buried deep in the pages, and you'll have to find it and read it, there's actually a pathway for people to go on mission with us. And so as they read through the book, there's a section in there which gives them instructions on if they want to go on mission, they can do that and how they do it. So that way, whether it's their civilian or military, and so those trips will be different, right? Like a civilian will have a separate civilian trip, and the military will go on a military trip, because the veterans trips are highly subsidized by all the fundraising that I do. Normally it costs about $2,000 to take guys down and go through this program. But with the fundraising that I do, it only costs the veteran $500, which is basically just the cost of their plane ticket to go through the program. And just to be totally clear and transparent, nobody in Q Missions receives a paycheck, not even me. Like there's no paid staff. It's 100% volunteer. If people do donate, the money goes directly to these programs to help guys overcome PTSD. So you can check us out on GuideStar. You know, you can ask people about us. There's no paid staff. You know, it's not like Wounded Warrior Project. you know,
right.
Throwing big lavish parties and blowing all kinds of donor money on stupid stuff. You know, we don't do that. So,
I'm actually glad you brought up the donation aspect, because, you know, as a nonprofit, you know, a lot of your funding is coming from donations and things like that. So if people would like to donate, where can they go to find out about how to make a donation to Q Missions? Is it, you know, just by visiting your website, or where can they go to make a donation?
Yeah, the website's the easiest way is on the website. It gives you a couple different options there. You can donate online. There's a place where you can send a check if you're old school and you want to do it that way. So either way, yeah, that's that's the best way to donate. We do a lot of fundraisers throughout the year. We do a fireworks stand. We have a benefits dinner. So if you guys are local in the Pacific Northwest and you want to attend any of those events, hit us up on our email there, info@qmissions.org. And or visit our website and contact us through there. And we can get you connected to some of those other opportunities to volunteer or to donate. I'm really big, since I'm a business owner, I'm really big into getting corporate donations. And so that's kind of my niche, is to work with different businesses. I mean, I'm a business owner, and the majority of our profits go directly into helping Q Missions. And so not trying to be braggadocious here, but I put my money where my mouth is, and still to this day, I'm the largest donor to the organization. So hopefully somebody will surpass me someday. But for right now, me and my company, we're the largest donors to the organization. So I'm not asking people to do something that I'm not doing myself. Right. And I love it. I love what my pastor says. He says, when it comes to missions work, there's only two options. You can go or you can write a check. So that's what I'm going to challenge all you guys out there who are business owners who are hearing this. Either come on with me, come on mission with me, or write a check so other guys can do it. So that's my challenge, I guess, to the audience.
There you go. Yeah.
To check it out.
And that's at qmissions.org, where you can go and make a tax deductible donation to Q Missions and help some veterans go and heal through this service that they'll be doing. So, this was really amazing. Information that you had to share. So thank you very much for joining us today, sharing these stories of the healing process that people have gone through. I really, really appreciate, the time that you've had with us here.
So. Yeah, no. Hey, thanks for having me on. It's been great. I'd love to be able to come back and talk to you just specifically about Operation Pop Smoke, the suicide prevention tool that we created. And I don't want to get into too much of it here just because we've been given the audience a lot to digest already.
Sure.
But I just want to throw that out there. If you're interested in finding out, it's a first aid tool to help prevent suicide. So you can look at operationpopsmoke.com. There's some great information there about what the app does. You can download it on the App Store, and you can also look us up on YouTube, and there's some great videos on YouTube that explain what the app does and how it works. It's all based on military battle tactics coupled with emerging technology to create the very first aid tool for suicide prevention. So it works similar to like the Heimlich maneuver, CPR, and the AED system, where it puts the power to save a life in the hands of the person closest to the victim.
That's amazing. And I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I had it in my notes that I wanted to mention that, but that it slipped down in my notes here. So, so we'll definitely try to get you back on to talk about that and how that works and how that can be beneficial to people, in these types of situations. So, thank you for not only joining us today, but all the work that you do helping veterans. It's an important mission that you have, and, if no one's told you this yet, like, you should feel good about the work that you're doing. And I really appreciate, all the work that you're doing. So,
thank you.
So thank you again.
So I have one parting question for you is, it's a challenge, I guess.
Okay.
I would just invite you to come with us on Operation Restore Hope to, experience this firsthand. And then you'll be able to give a firsthand account to your audience on the program.
That would be something that would be actually pretty interesting to do, a firsthand, report back, if you will, of, what the organization's about and what the whole process is like, because I'm sure some people sitting there might have a little bit of a gray area in terms of, is this for me? Is this not for me? But, getting, an objective third party, maybe, view that might be something pretty interesting. So I might take you up on that challenge at some point here. So, maybe after, all this coronavirus travel stuff, passes over us. Anyways, thanks again. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll have you back on, and, maybe we'll talk again about, seeing how we can get this type of trip going.
Awesome. All right. Thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.